This is Fresh Air. When actor John Leguizamo was starting out, some people told him to try and pass for white, not to limit himself to being Hispanic. He says he had to prove to everyone that being Hispanic wasn't limiting. So Leguizamo created Mambo Mouth, a one-man show featuring a gallery of Latino characters. Mambo Mouth was an off-Broadway hit. It begins a run on HBO this Saturday night. The characters range from Pepe, a Mexican who tries to keep from getting deported by trying to pass for Swedish, Irish, and Jewish, to Agamemnon, the macho host of the public access talk show Naked Personalities.
Let's start the show, as we always do, by reading letters from women that want to be loved by me around the world. And this first letter is from a woman that wants to be loved by me in El Salvador. Nice little underdeveloped country. And it says, "Dear Mr. Agamemnon," she repeat me, "I am a Republican single Hispanic woman. Please come to my rescue, invade me, blockade me, dictate me." I didn't see that it continued. "Spill your oils on my virginal beaches. Deplete me of my natural resources. Be mine forever, yours in Christ Mimosa."
I think it's great the way you could do characters who are so physically different. You know, you do this real macho Agamemnon talk show host, and then you do Manny the Fanny, who's a transvestite.
That's right, Cindy Crawford's better looking sister. That's right. You better talk to me, girl. What you got to problem? Tell me, go ahead, talk to me.
Where did you get the clothes, the speech, and the body language from? Was this based on somebody in particular?
Well, the emotional life. See, all my characters are like a collage effect, you know. It's like they come from all kinds of inspirations. I mean, I felt that the soulful part of it was my mom, and then she spoke like my cousin Mirtha. And then I modeled the physicality on this transvestite called Sassy that I went downtown and researched. Downtown New York is a 14th Street in the meat market, if anybody wants to go do some more research. And this transvestite named Sassy, that was her nickname. And she just talked to me, and she was dancing on the street and telling me about how she wears flat shoes so nobody comes and beats up so she could run away, because if she wore high heels, they would kill her.
Another character you do is Loco Louie, and in this sketch he loses his virginity. Well, he's telling a friend about losing his virginity with a fat prostitute, right. And he's bragging about how he's become a man, but the experience was actually very confusing and disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this based on?
Well, I'm not going to tell you exactly who it's based on, but you can probably guess. I mean, the reason I created that character was, I mean, I was like that crazed little kid, you know, and I know a lot of Latin people have these wild personalities that are really funny and I love so much. And so I give that as a tribute to that. But the whole story that he tells of losing his sexuality was because when I was 13 and 12, as a matter of fact, sex was already so important. And I noticed that in white culture, it wasn't so important. I mean, 13-year-old white kids aren't so obsessed with having sex. I mean, talking about it and sneaking maybe Playboys, but I mean, because I guess you grew up in the inner city. I'm talking about inner city life. And you don't have that much toys. You don't travel to Europe on weekends. You know what I'm saying? You don't have all these distractions. The only few things you have are sports and sex. You know what I'm saying? So it's like sex became such an important issue in my life. You know, because all my friends had it, or they would tell me they had it. And I'm sure some of them did have it. So that it became really important. And people were dating, and we were having spin the bottle, playing dentist, and turn off the lights and fill up the girl parties, you know? And we were only 13. So, I mean, that's what it was. It was so important to us to have it, and that's why this kid brags about it, makes such a big deal about it. And to have sex, regardless of how much he was in love or not in love, was not the issue. It was just to have sex and be able to say that I had it. I'm a man. I belong. I'm coming of age.
So should I ask you if you lost it with a prostitute?
Well, I lost it before that. I lost it when I was 13, if you could call it losing it. I wasn't sure. I didn't finish the whole act, so I don't know if you... I was pushed off. So I don't know if I finished it. But I guess that's losing it. And then I almost lost it again. And then I finally did lose it with a prostitute when I was a little older.
Well, this character, this Loco Louie character that you do, he feels like, well, now he's really got it. Now he's really a man. So he's hanging on the corner, you know,
making, screaming it out at all his friends or anybody who cares to listen.
Yeah, and making kissing noises at the women who go by and saying like, "Hey, baby, how about a little tongue drill?" did you do that kind of stuff on the corner?
I did that kind of stuff, and kids still do it. And I'm amazed when I see a 10-year-old doing that because, you know, especially inner-city street kids. I mean, there's Latin people come in so many different factions, and I'm not talking about all Latin people. I'm talking about certain types of people and types that I related to. And yeah, you know, it was, my ex-girlfriend was walking down the street, and all these little 10-year-old kids were making all these comments at her, and she was just cracking up, you know? I mean, some women are offended by those kind of comments, but I just find that, I don't know. I think it depends, you know. I think guys are showing their appreciation of a woman, but nowadays it would be sexual harassment, right?
Well, it doesn't always feel like an appreciation when you're the woman walking by and someone's making those kissing noises at you.
Yeah, I guess it's tough.
So
I won't be doing it anytime soon.
Yeah, no,
right?
No, I want you to stop doing that, John.
All right, it's just me in every corner. If you hear, "Ay, mami, mira," it's me, all right? And I'm just joking.
Now, you tried acting before doing Mambo Mouth. I mean, you did act before.
I tried acting.
Yeah.
What are you getting at, Terry?
That didn't come out right.
You think I failed or something? Should I try again? Yeah, no.
Until you get it right, John.
All right, I will. I promise. I will be trying. Seriously.
What kind of roles were you getting before Mambo Mouth? I know you did Casualties of War.
Right, which was a pretty interesting role, especially for a Latin person, because I wasn't a drug dealer. I wasn't a scam artist. I wasn't a junkie or cleaning somebody's house or an illegal alien. So that was unique in that sense. The only problem I had with the role was that it was so underwritten, I felt, you know. It was a very pivotal role in the movie, and not just because I'm an actor that I wanted a bigger part, but I just felt it was unwritten because being Latin, you become too representative for all of Latin people. You know, when I write my pieces, all of a sudden, it's like if Eugene O'Neill, to pick anybody at the top of my head, wrote Long Day's Journey to Night, and that was representative of all white people, there would be so many people being on his case going, "Well, my mother wasn't a junkie. My father's not an alcoholic. How dare you?" But that's what happens with Latin work, is that it becomes overly symbolic and representative of all Latin people, and it can't possibly be. It can only be my Latin experience. And so when I act sometimes, I take that burden on myself, I guess voluntarily, being the masochist that I am, that when I did Casualties, I just felt, God, it was so underwritten, and he was the one that was two-faced and wasn't strong enough, couldn't talk up for himself, so that kind of bothered me.
My guest is John Leguizamo. His one-man show, Mambo Mouth, begins a run on HBO Saturday night. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Actor and writer John Leguizamo is my guest. Now, I'm interested in finding out more about you. You were born in Colombia?
Well, I'm not going to tell you. Go ahead. I dare you. I was born in Colombia. So what? Yeah, I'm defensive. What's up, woman? No, yeah, I was born in Colombia, and I came here when I was 4 years old, and then my parents followed. See, I was very innovative.
what made your family decide to move to the States?
I guess lack of opportunities and problems. My dad has Puerto Rican ascendancy, so they have. I'm half Puerto Rican, half Colombian, but they came here because it was just difficult. My dad had a whole bunch of jobs in South America, and it just like he was a very ambitious man, and he wanted to be a film director when he was 19 years old and studied for it. But you know, there was just no opportunities in Latin America. I mean, that's one great thing about America, and even if I put it down sometimes or have a lot of problems, only to make it better, because this is truly the greatest country in the world. I mean, I feel that America is really a land of opportunity. And my parents came here with nothing and worked their culos off. That means their buns in Spanish. Just to make something. And they were able to make something of themselves. Even though it was a big struggle and there was a lot of racism and stuff involved, you can still work through it.
What did your parents end up doing professionally?
My father owns some real estate, and my mom, she was a business manager at a German bank.
Mm-hmm.
She handled Latin affairs stuff. But my father, I mean, when they first came here, my father had two jobs in restaurants, and he tried to pass himself off as Italian so that he wouldn't have to be washing dishes in the kitchen, because he was light-skinned enough, and his features were were passing enough so that he could pass for Italian. And so he'd tell them that he was Italian and fake an Italian accent. I guess that's where I got my acting skill from surviving. And then he'd get waitering jobs so he could make more money. And then he'd have two of those jobs or three of them sometimes. I hardly saw my father that much when I was growing up. And then my mom worked at a doll factory for a while, and then she became a receptionist and then a secretary. And she moved away. I worked really hard. I come from a very workaholic-type family.
When your father was passing for Italian, did that used to eat away at him when he came home?
I don't think so. Not my father. I don't want to talk about him anymore because it's hard. No, it didn't eat away at him. I mean, I think my father had a lot of shame with him. He's always had a lot of shame, I mean, about his accent, and he'd assume, and I assume sometimes that when you go to restaurants and you're given, even my aunts, my family, you just can't help it. You go to restaurants and you're given like this weird, funky table all the way in the back. You think it's because of who you are, because of your ethnicity, because you're Latin, and they dislike you. But sometimes I don't think it's that, you know?
Sometimes it's just the only table left.
Yeah, sometimes it is only table, and sometimes it is racism. It's just, and it's so hard to be able to sometimes put away and just be objective and take each moment as it is. But sometimes you just carry on that burden with you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. No, I read about you that you, when you decided you wanted to act, you tried to find an acting school from the phone book.
I did. My fingers did the walking, and I went to the Yellow Pages, and I found this place called Sylvia Lee Showcase Theater. I said, "Showcase, that sounds good." And I went there, and I studied with this lady who thought she was Vivian Lee, doing Streetcar Named Desire. Sweetest little lady, and she took me and took my money, and actually, the first scene I did, I was amazingly incredible. I mean, I said, "Damn, boy, I'm a seriously talented." And I did it, and I got some people from NYU. I was 17, and some NYU people wanted to do films with me and whatnot. But then every scene I did after that was so bad, I didn't understand what happened. And that's when I continued acting for the rest of my life and pursuing it.
So was the school helpful at all?
It was, totally was. I mean, to have studied, and she worked real hard on my diction and my speech because she said, you know, don't limit yourself. You can be so many other things. Don't limit yourself with your accent and things like that, which happened to me a lot in my career. I auditioned for Juilliard, and I guess I wasn't Elizabethan enough. It was kind of hard in Jackson Heights when everybody talks, "Hey, yo, what's up, man? What's up?" But I did some. I took out records from Sir John Gielgud and tried. "Is this a dagger which I see before me? The handle taut." And I did it just like the record did at the audition. And this lady said, "Excuse me, but you have a too thick a New York City minority accent." I said, "And what do you have, lady? A Long Islandese accent, perhaps?" And she said, "You're very talented, but you just have an accent, and we can't put you in Juilliard." But I still struggled. I never gave up.
I have one last question for you. Some people have criticized Mambo Mouth for having like stereotypical characters. What do you say to that?
I mean, I feel, first of all, Mambo Mouth had some sense of stereotyping because it took prototypes that are in the media that I was accosted with, that I had to deal with all the time in terms of casting and also there were characters that I also loved. So I took these one-dimensional things and made them as three-dimensional as possible and injecting them with the real life that is so lacking when I see them on television and the movies. And that's what I did with that. It was like, Mambo Mouth is an exorcism for me, a purge of all that. And to the stereotypes, if people couldn't see beyond that and see, because I felt there was depth, if I pat myself on the back, I thought it was much deeper than that. And people who got caught just on the stereotypes, I feel like they missed the whole point. They totally missed the point. And that's what happens when people see Living Color. They just see, oh, man, I mean, black people themselves see, oh, there's too many stereotypes on that show. Everybody's thieves and homeboys. I mean, there's so many other people. But, I mean, comedy is based on a lot of recognition. And I feel, first and foremost, I am trying to do a comedy. And when Latin people can mock themselves and we can mock our image and who we are, I feel it's a great step to moving on to other areas, you know?
Yeah.
And there was the majority of Latin people who did come to see the show loved it to death. And they would tell me, "Oh, yo, man, I know so many people like that. I grew up in Jackson Heights. I know all those people. Oh, man, I know those transvestites from Vaseline Alley, an actual place in Jackson Heights." So, I mean, they're taken from real life. And if people just feel like these are in the exact representation of Latin people, it's because they have aspirations to being something else. And they want that Bill Cosby Latin experience, which I can't write about because it ain't mine. you know?
Well, John, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Always a pleasure, Terry. Next time, I'll do the same thing.
Okay.
Goodbye, mommy. Meet up.
John Leguizamo's one-man show, Mambo Mouth, begins a run on HBO this Saturday night. This is Fresh Air.